for me a great pleasure to introduce the Secretary General of NATO, Mr. Yaptai Oftekhefa. The Secretary General will do a brief introduction, and then we'll open the floor for a question. I remind you, everybody, that this is an on-the-record session, and I would therefore ask you, before making your question, to identify yourself. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and a great pleasure to be able to speak to you this morning and reacting to your comments and answering your questions. Let me very briefly, as Alberto Bin was saying, let me very briefly introduce the subject, and I'll wait here until all the equipment is ready.
Okay. That's great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are they all working? Well, let me start by saying that NATO, and I think that's the reason that we're talking here, NATO has undergone and is undergoing a permanent process of transformation after the Cold War, after the fall of the wall, after 9/11. You have seen the alliance taking on new missions, new operations, managing crises in Bosnia, being present in Kosovo, being in Afghanistan, airlifting African troops into Darfur at this very moment. In other words, trying to, what I would call, project stability, a projection of stability to regions of the world which, of course, were unthinkable during the many decades of the Cold War. Why? And why are we sitting here around this table? Because also your part of the world is faced by exactly the same threats and challenges as NATO. And that new concept of security, the concept of security NATO has embarked upon, based on cooperation rather than confrontation, the Cold War, of course, was the period of confrontation. This is a new approach to security, and it is inclusive rather than exclusive. And that is the reason that over the past years, many years already, NATO has reached out to many partners and many new partners. You know about Central and Eastern Europe. You know about Russia and Ukraine. You know about the Caucasus and Central Asia. And, of course, since 1994, NATO has had and has its Mediterranean dialogue with the Maghreb countries, Israel and Jordan. But there was a feeling that this dialogue could meet and should meet more beef. It should be beefed up, to say it in practical terms. We had done a lot, but I think we, that means the nations in question and NATO, could and should do more together. So then came Istanbul, the summit last year, June, and there the two important decisions were made. For two processes, which are, let me underline that, progressive, complementary, and individualized. A more ambitious and expanded framework for the Mediterranean dialogue, which was there, but in which we could do better than we did, and we, as always, the countries concerned and NATO, and expanded framework, and besides the expanded framework for the Mediterranean dialogue, outreach with and cooperation to interested countries in the broader Middle Eastern region, starting with individual members of the GCC, the Gulf Cooperation Council. Let me briefly mention the principles. These were the two initiatives taken at the Istanbul summit. They are founded and based on the important principle: first, non-discrimination. All Mediterranean dialogue and ICI partners are offered the same basis for cooperation. Second, self-differentiation, which allows a tailored approach to the specific needs of each of our partner countries in the Mediterranean and in the broader Middle East. Third, and perhaps most important thing, it's a two-way street. You can never impose anything to anybody. There should be added value for NATO, and there should be added value for the countries concerned. It's a two-way street. It is not NATO coming and say, well, listen, here we have this and we have that, you either accept it or not. It is a two-way street. It is in dialogue, and on the basis of what the countries concerned see fits and where they see the added value, that NATO embarks upon processes of cooperation. In what fields? Intelligence sharing, common exercises, participation in Operation Active Endeavour, defense reform, training, there are lots of possibilities we can work on, and we are already working on, of course, for years in the framework of the Mediterranean dialogue. Important to note that NATO has no ambition and no intention whatsoever to enter into the domestic dynamics of the Mediterranean dialogue of ICI countries. The countries concerned choose the pace of cooperation. And the last important principle I would like to mention is complementarity. NATO's Mediterranean Dialogue and the Istanbul Cooperation Initiative are complementary to other initiatives taken by the EU, by the G8, by the OSCE, by the 5+5. In other words, what NATO is not doing and should not do is doubling or duplicating contacts existing with your nations in other frameworks. NATO is NATO. NATO is the political military organization it is, and NATO, we think, can bring the added value, and the countries concerned can bring the added value to NATO. So no substitution for other efforts going on in the region, and certainly also no substitution for efforts dealing with the Israeli-Arab problem. NATO is not a player. That's the quartet. You know all about this. NATO is not seeking a role in the solution of the Israeli-Palestinian Palestinian conflict. But to come back to that major point, we are facing exactly the same threats and challenges. The Arab world is as much attached by terrorism as is the rest of the world. The nations concerned are as much afraid of further proliferation of weapons of mass destruction as is the rest of the world. So the region you come from could be as much affected by failed and failing states and the consequences. In other words, the new security environment in which we live, wherever we are, be it in Canberra in Australia, where I was a few months ago, or in the UAE, or in Egypt, in Israel, or in Morocco, the challenges are all the same. I've been to almost all the Mediterranean dialogue countries. I'm going to Egypt in October. I'm going to start visiting the ICI partners. We have now in the ICI, as you know, Kuwait, Bahrain, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates. I'm going to travel the region as well, and we hope, of course, the other two nations, being Saudi Arabia and Oman, might also decide to join at a certain stage. But my experience up till now, on the basis of my visits to Northern Africa, Jordan and Israel, and you might know that we have started exploratory contacts with the Palestinian Authority as well, which is I think a step worth mentioning. My experience up till now is very positive. It's very positive. If we do it on the basis of this two-way street, of the added value on the one hand and on the other hand, as I explained to you, I think there is a lot to gain in this dialogue, and there's a lot to gain in this relationship. And once again, we should work hard to realize what we want to realize. And I think the Istanbul decisions on the strengthening of the Med dialogue on the one hand and launching the Istanbul Cooperation Initiative on the other hand has been a very good decision, and I take a personal interest in making this happen. My deputy has traveled already the Gulf region. I'm going to follow him. In other words, you see me sitting in front of you as a NATO Secretary General who thinks that he can be satisfied with the progress reached up to now. A lot remains to be done. I need to do a lot about NATO's image in the Arab world, of course. So there's a lot necessary. That is, of course, what you do and why it's important for me to talk to you. Of course, in many parts, and I can understand that NATO still has the image of the Cold War organization, and I have to work on this, we have to work on this. We have to work, of course, on the image of the Arab world in NATO, in the NATO nations. That's also a two-way street we have to work on. But the balance, I can tell you this morning, up till this moment, is a very positive balance in my opinion. And I think the modern NATO, the transforming NATO, as an organization which is projecting stability, is a good and interesting organization for the Arab world, as is the Arab world a very interesting and pivotal part of the world for NATO. It's a pivotal part. What's going on in your region is essential for world stability and security. We all know that. I don't need to embark upon that. It's essential. It's perhaps the most essential region if we look at geopolitics and longer term security and stability. That's the reason that also NATO, in its modern form, in its transformation, in its adaptation to the modern threats and challenges, should be present in the Arab world as well, and the Arab world should be present in NATO. Let me stop here and ask you to react and give me your questions and comments.
Yeah, I might start with your coming from Egypt. I believe the bright star exercise with...
I think there's a question if you can use your microphone.
Okay. I would like to start with a question about Egypt and the Gulf at the same time. My name is Hanan Al-Badri. I'm an Egyptian journalist. I would like to know, are you going to be somehow involved on this coming October Bright Star exercise as usual, and how far you can look to Egypt, the role Egypt can do in what you are working on. Also regarding the Gulf, I would like to know, in case US Emirates and the rest of the Gulf will join.
Mm-hmm.
What about Iran, or that will protect them from any planning?
Thank you.
Shut up. Okay.
Thank you very much. I'll not be involved in exercise. I'm going to Egypt. I forgot to mention, but you know that in December 2004, we had a very successful meeting where for the first time all the Mediterranean dialogue partners were represented at political level. And almost all of them on foreign minister level. Mr. Abubakr, the Egyptian foreign minister, was there. I spoke to him a few times afterwards. I'm going to Egypt, let's say, because Egypt is a Mandela part of it, also because Egypt is of course a very important country in the region. It goes without saying that Egypt plays a very important role indeed in. Let's say finding an answer to the threats and challenges I mentioned. That goes without saying. So my visit, I consider my visit to Egypt as a very important one, because as a NATO Secretary General, it's special that I'm going to Egypt. I have been there before, but in different incarnations, in different capacities. But I consider this visit very important on the basis of the political framework of the Mediterranean dialogue I have just given to you. Your remark or question on the Gulf, we have this Istanbul Cooperation Initiative, and it's open for nations in the broader Middle East. We have said we are starting with the interested nations in the framework of the Gulf Cooperation Council, and that is what the ICI is about, and other nations up till now have not shown an interest, and I think it would be much too far-fetched at this stage to think about Iran joining.
You can just give us more details about your trip to Egypt. I mean, what do you expect? I mean, what do you ask for? If you go...
But do not forget that Egypt is already a very active partner in the framework of the Mediterranean dialogue. I mean, if you see the list, what NATO does with Egypt, I mean... But what is important is, and that I try to explain to you, that there was a decision in Istanbul last year. And that decision was, we're going to make this much stronger, this Mediterranean dialogue. And that means that with the restrictions I have given to you, and I'm not going to discuss with Minister Abu Ghait and hopefully with your president the Israeli-Palestinian problem. No, because as I told you, NATO is not seeking a role in that. But what I'm going to discuss with him is what I have discussed with the Moroccan king, the Algerian president, and all the other heads of state and government. That is, how can we beef it up? What is Egypt's position? What would Egypt like to see NATO doing? Where does Egypt see more forms of cooperation. What exactly is Minister Abu Gates and the President's opinion on the content of the political dialogue? What they think NATO could further do? Where is the added value? I mean, it's my very first visit. But these are, of course, the subject I'm going to discuss, and we have, of course, without any doubt, a general political dialogue about the Middle East, because I'm interested in the foreign minister's opinion on what's going on. I'm interested. I mean, NATO, as I said, is a political military organization, and NATO is interested, of course, in what's going on in the region, but NATO is not going to duplicate efforts by others.
Yes. Please.
Ron Davis, Kuwait News Agency. In my notes, a phrase you used that sort of stuck out at me, and I wanted you to explain more. You referred to failed and failing states. And could you, I'm trying to get a handle around my head of what that, sort of like a buzzword, what's the NATO role in failed and failing states? And could you be more specific, if possible, even perhaps as examples of such and so forth?
Well, there's, of course, no direct role. That was not the implication of what I said about NATO roles in failed and failing states. But let me give you a very concrete example. It's Afghanistan. What would have happened in Afghanistan when NATO would not have embarked upon the important and heavy responsibility of bringing security and stability to Afghanistan? Then Afghanistan would continue to be a black hole and a net exporter of terrorism. And that would have its consequences not only in Afghanistan but spread, one could say, across the world, because where were those terrorist trains, among other places? That was in Afghanistan. Why is it so important, to give you a second example, why is it so important that whatever the big problems, that Iraq continues its way to stability, security and democracy? Because there's a lot at stake. There's a lot at stake. But not only for the region, of course, in the first place for the region, but that's why I said it's so pivotal for the world at large, of course. And that is why NATO, to give you an example, I mean, Iraq is not a failed state, nor a failing state, but that is why NATO is embarking upon this important training mission. The Iraqi government has come to NATO and said, please train our leadership. Train the leadership of our military. Why? Because we want to take our fate into our own hands as soon as possible. And that is what NATO is doing. You know that Iraq is a complicated subject, also in NATO, given the past. But everybody agrees, and coming back to your question, everybody agrees that it is an enormous interest that the Iraqi take their own fate into their own hands. That's why I have made very positive remarks about the fact that the constitution was tabled, so that Iraq can further develop. And we all know about the problems, we all know about the violence, and we unfortunately see it every day on our television screens, why it's so important. We should work together with the region, and I say again, NATO has no direct role, of course, in further failing states, but we should prevent them from and I've given you the example of Afghanistan, from continue to be failing or failed states, because it's a risk for everybody and anybody.
Can I just follow up?
Oh, yes, please.
Is it safe to say that the ROC, as we know it today, it certainly has the potential to be a failed or failing state in the next few years? It's not trying to be overly negative, but is this something you have to look ahead and think about?
I refuse to accept that. I refuse to accept that. And I'll tell you why I'm saying this. There is no alternative for Iraq. Whatever the past, and we all know that there were differences of opinion in the EU, in NATO, in the UN Security Council. I mean, but I'm saying politically, let bygones be bygones here. I see in NATO an absolute consensus of all 26 NATO allies that there is no alternative for the process the Iraqi people have embarked upon. There's no alternative. And that's why I simply politically refuse to accept that situation. And we all have to work together. And that goes for the region as much as for, and then I'm back to the Mediterranean dialogue and the relationship between NATO and that part of the world. We all have to work together and to support that process. I refuse to accept that.
Yes. My name is Munir Mowari.
I am Yemeni American journalist who works for Ashrad al-Alfa, Saudi newspaper, and Arab. My question is about, I will take a different direction, the hurricane in America. We mm-hmm. heard yesterday report that the U.S. asked for the NATO help. Is that true, first of all? Second of all, what can you do to help America in that situation? And second question, what is your role in fighting terrorism in NATO?
Well, first on Hurricane Katrina, yes, the United States has also approached NATO for assistance and for help. We have, as you know, a role in disaster relief coordination, and we are working at this very moment exactly to do just that. Of course, we do that also in consultation with, for instance, the European Union and others. But NATO has been approached, and NATO will deliver, and perhaps even beyond the disaster relief. I could imagine that for the longer term, the stricken area, don't forget, it's half the size of France, which is underwater, might need many more things. And I think, as I said publicly when I was in Sofia at the press conference last week, Friday, I think NATO should do everything it can to show the solidarity with our most important friend and ally, the United States of America, as I've seen many other nations do, to my joy. So NATO will play its role, and NATO will do its part. I can guarantee. The second part of your question was
about terrorism.
NATO has, I say again, in the international concert of nations fighting terrorism, NATO has, of course, its important role as well. It has different aspects. First of all, let me start with the very practical aspects of NATO's role. At Istanbul, at the summit last year, heads of state and government of NATO adopted and accepted a whole package of 8 or 9 fields where NATO should have a very practical cooperation in the fight against terrorism. And that goes from developing projects of protecting civilian airliners against shoulder-fired missiles. That goes from protecting our AWACS fleets, the radar planes, protecting helicopters, protecting ports and harbors. That's on the very practical side. Then we have, of course, a very important element within NATO, but that is also something which is relevant for our dialogue, as I mentioned briefly in my introduction, is intelligence sharing. What is more important, I would say, in preventing these people doing their awful things than intelligence sharing beforehand, having as close a relationship as possible, telling each other what we know. That is another very important element. The third element I should mention is that NATO has its operation, which is called Active Endeavour, a maritime operation in the Mediterranean, which is, as you perhaps know, an Article 5 operation, which was started after 9/11, which is an operation specifically directed against terrorism. Here again, when I mention Active Endeavour in the Mediterranean, it's crystal clear that all the states in the Mediterranean dialogue have a clear interest. And I'm very glad to mention that more and more there is interest in supporting, in one way or the other, this maritime operation. We see port calls by the ships of Operation Active Endeavour. Interesting to note, by the way, that soon the Russians will formally join and support Operation Active Endeavour with ships participating in the operation. And I know that in some Arab nations there's also keen interest in one way or the other supporting this operation. Here you have some examples of a specific NATO role. Here again I say we should not duplicate or double the role in the fight against terrorism played by others. But if I go to Egypt, to come back to your question, this is of course a very important subject. What is the opinion of the Egyptian government? Where do they think that NATO could play a role? Where does NATO think that we can increase cooperation on the sharing of intelligence on the fight against terrorism? So it is the political leg, or volet, to say it in French, and there in NATO, a very practical leg or in the fight against terrorism, and I've given you a few examples of that as well. But everywhere I come, talking to foreign ministers, defense ministers, heads of state, the conversation starts with terrorism. And quite understandably so. Because you look at Sharm el-Sheikh. Look at Yemen. Look at Kenya. Look at Bali. Look at London. Look at 9/11. Look at Saudi Arabia. I mean, terrorism is everywhere, and they want to undermine the fabric of our societies, be they Arab, be they Western European. That they want to destroy our societies. And if we do not work together and say no, this is for somebody else. And again, what happens in your region is pivotal in this respect. Pivotal. They strike and hit everywhere. And what we have to very much beware of in NATO, by the way. And that's why I, after we had two council meetings after London, very emotional, I can tell you, very emotional meeting. I said, now we have to beware of one thing, and that goes for the relationship, I think, between NATO and the Arab world as well. Beware of one thing, and that is that we do not simply go back to the order of the day after we lower the flags and we have a council and we say we show solidarity with the victims and their loved ones and their families. Because that's the human tendency to say, well, and I'm not specifically mentioning London, we should be permanently aware that this danger is everywhere. And then I come, for instance, to NATO's operation in Afghanistan, sir, coming back to your question. If we do not do it far away from home, then the problem will end on our doorstep. A daughter asked me once, she's 25 and a tax lawyer, good education. So, she said, Daddy, where are you going next week? And I said, I'm going to Kabul. And she knows NATO has an operation there. She asked, why? And I explained to her that if we don't confront the confrontation there, the results end up on our doorstep. And that is why we have absolutely no alternative to working together. And that goes for NATO as much as for the European Union or for the G8 or for the 5-to-5. We have to play our own role there. And I'm glad to be able to report to you that this is something which is very much alive in the Arab world and in Israel for that matter as well.
We have to move very quickly, the last two questions.
Okay, I have
Yeah, because the Secretary General to them.
Mohammed Nishari, I'm from Safir, Washington, new information source for Arab media from Washington, in Arabic. You mentioned the security environment is similar everywhere. I'm afraid I disagree. I don't think security structure for Norway or Poland is similar to Egypt or Saudi Arabia. Terrorism is a threat for everybody, but the strategic setting is completely different, I think. You mentioned the issue, the image problem for NATO and Arab world, and for Arab in the NATO. What Arab countries and media should do to correct or make it more understandable for NATO members and officials to get the correct image? And you mentioned cooperation between NATO and Palestinian Authority. Are you going to cooperate with them as they are, or going to enhance their security capability first before you engage with them?
To answer your last question, as I said, in the Istanbul Declaration is the possibility that the PA joins the Mediterranean Dialogue. That depends on a decision by the NAC, by the North Atlantic Council. We are not that far yet. But when I met impromptu, informally, during the Madrid Terrorism Summit, Saeb Erekat and Mohamed Ahlan, Erekat I knew already from a previous incarnation, they said, Secretary General, we have seen your visits to the Arab world, to Israel. It was in the media. Well, what about this? And I said, well, that's a fair question. So I went back to Brussels and I told the North Atlantic Council here, listen, I met these two people. I had a brief conversation with them. That's a completely legitimate question. So what I did then is send my chief of staff to Ramallah. He talked with the relevant Palestinian authorities. He came back and reported. And NATO has decided to come back to this issue after the summer and after Gaza disengagement. So here is where we are at the moment. I do not know exactly how it will move on politically. But the fact is that an information link with the PA has been established, which I think is important. I take your point. I have not tried to convince you of the fact that the strategic environment is the same everywhere. That's of course not true. The message I'm trying to get across is that as far as the modern threats and challenges are concerned, and I've given them to you, terrorism, proliferation, failed states, there's no difference between Norway and Egypt. There's no difference between the US and Chile. It's the same everywhere. Of course, Egypt is not Norway, and the Netherlands is not the United States. It goes without saying. I mean, the strategic environment in the Middle East is a different one than in Norway. I take your point. Of course, you're right there. But, I mean, if we look at the threats to our societies, I think they are more or less the same. I started by saying that we in NATO, and Mr. Bin is doing a lot with the public diplomacy division, my deputy is doing a lot, I try to do a lot, to get NATO's image across, also in the Arab world, which is, of course, not easy. I mean, I'm the first one to understand. I mean, I don't blame any nation or any Arab citizen for that. I was in Jordan in Amman half a year ago, and I had a pretty tough discussion there with the students and young people, older people, ex-ministers, and they said to me, "So, you know, there's a lot more that you should do about NATO's image." I said, "Yes, that's the reason I'm here. That's the reason I'm having this informal discussion with you. There's some reason having these discussions with you. I always do this personally when Arab journalists come. I don't leave it to my deputy or to others. I do it personally because I think it's important. On the other hand, it is important that we realize in our part of the world that we have perhaps too much of a tendency to speak about the Arab world. Well, the Arab world is as diverse as is the European Union, because Morocco is not Kuwait, and Kuwait is not Egypt. In other words, what we should do, and there you play a pivotal role, I must say, as journalists, reporting on what you hear from me and referring back to me what you pick up in the Arab world, what I pick up in the Arab world when I travel there. So here again, I think there's a lot to do. I think there's a lot to do. I know very well that if you mention NATO in the Arab world, many people will ask, what is it? And many other things will say, that's that organization which confronted the Soviet Union in the Cold War. Now see what we do. We have a close cooperation with the Russian Federation.
We have time for one last question. I know you had many, but the Secretary General has to go. He's already out of time. Your colleague who hasn't made any question.
Sami Yusuf, Al-Akhbar newspaper of Cairo. To what extent, Mr. Secretary General, do you think that the American foreign policy affects your image in the Middle East? This is one. I want you to address that. Do you think that it affects your image? To what extent, and what are you doing about that? And another question is that the UN is burdened by the peacekeeping operations all over the world now. Is NATO ready to pick up some of that burden out of the UN shoulder? Because the UN is crumbling under every other month. We have a new operation.
Two very relevant ones. Let me start with the UN. If you push your button, I think mine will. Start with the UN. I'm going there in what is it? 10 days time.
Yes.
Exactly to do what you're saying. Do not forget, madam, that in Afghanistan and in Kosovo, NATO is operating under UN mandate. Afghanistan is an operation which is under mandate of the United Nations Security Council, as is Kosovo. Darfur is a bit more complicated because there's no agreement, as you know, in the Security Council. But let's stick to Afghanistan and what I'm going to discuss with Secretary General Kofi Annan, and DPKO for that matter, is exactly this. The UN is overburdened. You're quite right. I think they have some 37 of the operations all over the world. That does not mean that there will be any automaticity. The North Atlantic Council will always decide itself what it does and what it doesn't. I mean, that's NATO. NATO is not, let's say, delegating power or decision-making power to the UN. That's not the case. There will be no automaticity there. But I hope to be able, when I go to New York, to speak to all the people there and to devise, I should say, a framework for more intense NATO-UN cooperation. That's absolutely necessary. Second element, I do not think that NATO's image in the Arab world suffers from US foreign policy. I don't think so. But I say again, do see the limitations of NATO's role. I explicitly told you NATO is not seeking an active role in the solution for the Israeli-Arab conflict. That is not what NATO is doing. But the answer to your question is I do not think that NATO is influenced by United States foreign policy in the region. I see a close Egyptian-U.S. relationship. A long-term relationship that is already. But more in general, I think NATO, in my experience, works very well and lives very well on the basis of U.S. foreign policy. I see, by the way, a U.S. Secretary of State and a U.S. President taking a very active approach in as far as the Middle East is concerned. Very active indeed.
Thank you very much, Secretary General, especially for staying more time than your schedule today allows.
It's always a problem.
I think we can take, if you wish, a group photo, but very, very quickly outside.